Я приветствую вас на моей сессии, последней сессии этой конференции. Очень доволен, что могу встретиться с вами. Я поляк, как вы слышите, мой русский не очень-то хороший, так что извините, пожалуйста, и поэтому вот вся эта сессия дальше будет представлена на английском языке, но я хотел бы сказать несколько слов про меня. Я работаю в компании Microsoft, в команде, которая называется Voice Center of Excellence. Я занимаюсь рынком, и у меня несколько лет практики с разными сетями, потому что поэтому мне попросили здесь представить сессию, доклад про расчет пропускной способности для Link 2013. Это последняя сессия нашей конференции уже, и последняя сессия в Link Track, так что позвольте мне поблагодарить вас за посещение вот этих сессий. Я думаю, что вы узнали много новых вещей про Link 2013. And this is the moment when I switch to English. Sorry about that. So I'll give you an opportunity to put your headset for those of you who want to have a translated version. So at this last session, during next hour, we will discuss, and I really urge you to ask questions during the sessions, because some concepts, especially concepts around video bandwidth consumption, are quite new and quite difficult. So we'll discuss the different types of link traffic, different types of flows, and how actually we can kind of model that to understand how much network resources, network bandwidth will be required if we place link in our network. We generally will focus on that traffic that's user generated. We will not discuss the traffic that servers exchange between themselves, and I'll give you the indication why. Okay. Let's let the lady finish her announcement. Okay, so the agenda for the session is very simple. I will first highlight what types of link traffic we can see in the network when the link is really deployed. Then I will discuss what are the flows of the network traffic, because it's very important to understand how the network, how the traffic flows in the network. And then we'll jump into the actual bandwidth modeling, and I will discuss that, and I will also show you tools, or rather a single tool that we provide to you, to customers, partners, and the tool that we use also ourselves, that helps us to do this modeling exercise of understanding how much network bandwidth we need from the network for the link. So first topic, the types of Link 2013 traffic. So first thing that's very important to understand is there are two major different types of traffic. One is the server to server. This is like a traffic when you have a link pool of a couple of servers and they exchange some information between them. Database updates, some other traffic, SIP signaling, lots of SIP signaling is exchanged between two frontends that are sitting in the same pool. Also, if these are different pools, typically this traffic is kind of ignored. The reason is because most often these pools are sitting in a data center which has a quite high bandwidth, and we really don't care how much the bandwidth is there, as long as link servers are connected in a proper supported way. A slightly different thing is the user-generated traffic. The user-generated traffic is signaling, and it's not just SIP signaling. It's a general signaling. Lots of other things that happen, like if the user signs in, it has to authenticate. Then there is the media. Media is basically when people are talking to each other, either using audio or video, and content. Content is basically when they are sharing some things or kind of sending some things over the link, like sending files over the link or doing desktop sharing. So we'll primarily focus on that second part of the traffic. And the reason is very simple, because the user-generated traffic comes to the link or comes to the network in a branch offices, in small offices, and that's where most often we have issues and where we have to calculate the bandwidth. We usually don't have issues with the network bandwidth in data centers, but we do have in remote offices. Now, the second kind of thing to realize, and if we are talking about the user-generated traffic, now we are putting the server-to-server traffic aside, and we are talking just user-to-user, Alice to Bob, Charlie to Diego, whoever. There is some part of the traffic that is nice, predictable. We more or less know how it works. We more or less understand how much resources from the network it might need. These are the types of the traffic that are mentioned here. Excuse me. All right. So it's signaling, SIP signaling, instant message. It's audio, it's video. It's also audio going to the PSTN. It's also things like when we share a desktop or share some view or single application, we can more or less easily predict how much of the bandwidth we need because these are good behaving types of link traffic. Now, the other types of traffic that are hard to predict, they can be significant. It could be quite a lot of link traffic going from these types of user interactions, like when people are sending files, like someone is doing conference attachments, attaching to conference Word documents, right? We can hardly understand how much link traffic there will be. Why? Because it depends on types of users or how users behave in organization. It's really almost unpredictable type of traffic, right? Some users might be heavy users of file transfer, for example. It's really hard to predict how many files they will be transferring. So we have to kind of, you know, make certain assumptions, and here we'll just be using the assumption that we will have to model that well-behaved traffic, the first class of traffic. All right, so let's discuss how this well-behaved user-generated traffic flows in the network, how it goes from one user to the other. Well, if you look at the network, and I'll be using, in this part of the presentation, I'll be using very, very simple model of the network. See, there is only one data center here, a central site, when we have a link server, or pool of link servers for our discussion right now, it really doesn't matter. Let's assume that there is a link server there. It will change slightly in next slides, but right now assume it's a single link server. And then we have three branches. Branch Adin, branch two, branch one, branch two, branch three. And in these branches we have users. Users Alice, users Bob, users Charlie. And they have all link 2013 clients. And now the very first thing that comes from these users is their signaling traffic. When they log in to their link clients, their link clients send some data, and initially the data, could be kind of big spike at the beginning because we have to authenticate, the user has to authenticate, the user has to get appropriate configuration from the link server. So initially you might observe some spike, but then later on, that traffic from that user is rather small. You can think several bytes per second or several tens of bytes per second. It's really kind of very, very small. However, there still might be some spikes when there are updates of presence. Because if the user Alice subscribes to presence of user Bob, she has the user Bob on her contact list, she wants to see if the user Bob is available or busy or maybe he's completely offline, every change in the state of user Bob will be propagated to user Alice. And that causes network traffic. So you'll see small spikes from time to time when users are changing their presence status. Now, the traffic flows always via the central site. Again, not very big traffic, but still always by the central site. Now, there is one exception, you could say. If we are deploying these survivable branch appliances, SBAs, or survivable branch servers, SBSs, which help remote branches to survive the lack of connectivity with the main central site, then the whole or major part of the signaling is staying locally. It's not going over the WAN. But for example, if we need to sign in and sign out, then there still will be some traffic going on over the WAN. Again, not very big traffic, but still has to be accounted for. Presence traffic is causing some spikes, and we have certain model that tells us on average, with average amount of users, what will be that amount of traffic, and I'll get to that when I'll be doing the modeling. Now, instant messaging. This is a kind of a tricky traffic because, well, first of all, in terms of flows, it also always flow also via the central side. If Alice sends any chat message to Bob, that chat message goes to the central side, goes back via the SIP signaling channel. Same SIP signaling channel, which is used for registration, for configuration, download or other stuff, is also used for sending SIP messages. What's the tricky part of the SIP signaling channel, for the instant messaging communication? The tricky part is, if it's just IM, it's not heavy. It's 1-2 kilobits on average per user. On average, if the user is typing, then stops typing. If the user sometimes attends the conferences, that's the average. That's what we kind of see in majority of the customers. You might think it's quite a lot. We try to be very conservative when modeling here, right? Because it's better to say it's 1 kilobit per second rather than say 100 bytes per second and then see some additional traffic going on. What's the trick there is users quite often use the instant messaging channel to send files between them. It's very common because it's so easy, right? I'm typing to Bob. Bob, here is the new version of my spreadsheet. I just added some comments there. Here it is. I'm just dragging and dropping, send. It's much easier to do that. It's even easier to do that than sending over email. If the Bob is there, he can instantly reply to me. The changes were okay. This is the part of the traffic that we cannot predict. So I have to warn you, the partially instant messaging could be a generator quite high load on the network. Depends on how your users are utilizing this particular link workload. Okay, next scenario or next type of traffic, the instant messaging conferencing. The instant messaging conferencing is basically the conference when we simply grab a couple of people quickly. Most often, we usually don't schedule the instant message conferences, but we quite often grab people and have a common chat between us. Quite often that happens when there is some meeting, boring meeting, right? And people are just setting up a back channel just to chat among themselves what the boring things are happening right now in the room. Of course, I'm joking, but this is what is happening. Now, instant messaging channel is exactly the same. Instant messaging flow is exactly the same as in point-to-point. It always flows to the central side. It's also important to note that in this case, from this user Charlie, who might be involved in conference, in instant message conference between Alice, Bob, and Charlie, that traffic flows there as well. Now, instant message conferences are quite sparsely used. They are not very often, but and most often, to be honest, they are used in conjunction with audio or video conferences. So, like, someone is setting up a normal audio and video conference, and then people open the IM channel just to chat, just to comment or whatever, right? So, from that perspective, amount of bandwidth for the instant message conference is not that big, because you have another chunk of conferencing, audio or video, which is definitely much bigger. But the instant message only conferences could generate some traffic on your network. Again, we typically in our model assume that under tens of kilobits per second per user, if organizations actually use them. If they don't, you can just forget them. Now, let's switch to another modality, audio modality. Audio modality in Link has many flavors, many ways of using network resources. We'll start with the simplest, peer-to-peer audio. So with the peer-to-peer audio, it's a simple modality, simple flow as well. When Alice calls Bob, despite of signaling which is going on, of course, to the central side, the LAs usually sends their network traffic directly to Bob. And usually, depending on the type of the network, but usually in modern networks, which are quite often based on technologies like MPLS or VPNs, if you wish, this is not even touching the central side. So the central side is not aware, in terms of load, I mean, that there is a traffic going on from Alice to Bob. So that just branches or one connections in branch A and branch B, they will be loaded with that network traffic. Now, this is the most common scenario. We've seen some cases, some rare cases, when you actually can have a situation when even a point-to-point call goes to the central side and then back. Or maybe just goes to the central side. The first situation is, that's a question. Point to point, why could it go to the central side? Okay, so I guess I heard two answers and both of them are correct. First is there might be user in central side or remote user actually. If we have an internet connection here and if we have edge here, right? A remote user that's accessing the whole thing from the internet will be outside, but the connection will be to him via the central side. If the Bob is right now working in the office, but is not connected to office network, but is connected via his 3G modem card, he will be from the internet, right? And sometimes people do that, believe it or not, but sometimes people do that. Now, the second answer from you was also very correct. There might be sometimes cases, very rare cases, when people, for some reasons, block branch-to-branch traffic. There are cases like that. There are cases like in hotels, for example, typically, people, well, these operators of hotel networks, they don't allow one user in a hotel to directly send the traffic to another user. This is just an example, right? And this is primarily for the reasons of security. So in this case, again, if there is link edge here, the traffic from Alice would go to the central side to the link edge, would be pinned on the edge and going back. This is actually not the recommended scenario from the link deployment perspective. We actually don't even support it. It's not that we just don't recommend, we really do not support it. But this is something that's happening from time to time in the customers. If they have some rules that prevent, some internal firewalls in their network that prevent peer-to-peer traffic. Okay, so the way this traffic is sent, of course, in Link 2013 client is exactly the same as in Link 2010. It's using RT audio codec. Most often it will be RT audio wideband codec. And here is the thing. Depending on the current networking conditions, your utilization might be floating. In ideal situation, or I should say in a normal situation, the single flow from here to here, from Alice to Bob, will be roughly around 35 kilobits per second. At maximum, could jump slightly higher, like to nearly 60 kilobits per second, right? What are the maximum and typical? It's quite important to understand also. You know, in normal conversation, when I'm speaking very much like that, there are short periods of silence during my speech, right? So in this period of silence, we stop sending packets, right? We don't need to send packets if I just go silent for a moment. And these little periods of silence count, they do. And that is a typical utilization. However, some people talk more than others, right? It's a cultural thing, really, right? I mean, like, I don't know about Russians, but like Italians talk a lot, right? That was meant to be a joke. So their network utilizations most likely will be higher than just 35 kilobits per second. Now, the other thing that's important to understand, it depends on networking conditions. So if you have a pretty stable network, lossless network, doesn't lose packets, has lots of bandwidth, it will probably stay like that. If you start experiencing some packet loss, actually we might try to, because the idea in Link is try to keep the quality, we might try to engage mechanisms that prevent loss of voice And this mechanism called forward error correction actually adds additional overhead because it has to protect the voice stream. So it adds additional overhead. There are some mathematical algorithms involved, and additional overheads helps us. If some of the data, some of the voice in a packet is lost, then we can still recover. But unfortunately, that means that we can sometime, from time to time, kick slightly more data, slightly more packets into the network. Now, on top of that, you have to add some additional data, bandwidth for what's called RTCP. RTCP is additional channel. It's not signaling channel. It's like voice quality reporting channel. So there is, from Alice to Bob is flowing kind of single stream, what's called RTP, or rather SRTP, secured RTP audio, where Alice is talking to Bob. At the same time, in reverse direction, from Bob to Alice, we see RTCP. That's how client of Alice, of Bob reports to Alice. I can hear you well. I can hear you well. Oh, I'm hearing some packet drops. Please start doing something about it. Right? This is RTCP, and it's, you know, it's constant because otherwise we wouldn't be able to monitor. So that's this additional 5 kilobits per second is more or less overhead for these reports. RTCP is being used very heavily in video, and you'll see that. Next slides, even if I forget, you might see in next slides the RTCP channel is going slightly higher than 5 kilobits per second, especially for the video. Now, the interesting thing in Link 2013 is also, before I go into that one, I have to discuss this. Now, if some network conditions prevent us from delivering a proper audio quality report as reported by RTCP channel using RT audio wideband, then the link clients, which are engaged in that conversation from Alice to Bob, they might decide to switch the codec. The codec will be switched in the middle of the call. You wouldn't notice it, kind of, because actually you should notice a better voice quality in this case, because instead of RT audio, which cannot provide you with a sufficient quality, you are switching to RT audio narrowband, from wideband to narrowband, and narrowband by definition utilizes like half of that bandwidth. It's approximation. There are very clearly defined values. You can find them in documentation on TechNet, and I'll give you a referral later on. I just didn't want to throw too many numbers at you during the presentation, because that's why we have TechNet. Numbers are there. Here I wanted to explain more mechanism. So this is it, right? So we can float between various numbers, right? And then there's one more factor which came to us with Link 2013. So Link 2013 client can actually receive stereo audio. In Link 2010, when the microphone, like this one or whatever microphone I have connected to my laptop, grabs the my audio, it's just one microphone, so it's a mono, right? We encode it with using RT audio wideband or RT audio narrowband. Now, with Link 2013, we are planning on introducing something which we are going to be calling Link Meeting Room Edition on the Link Meeting Room systems. And these will be more or less systems with multiple microphones. And that's where stereo starts to make sense. You have multiple microphones. You might want to have multiple channels because then people who will be listening to that will be able to hear more. Oh, it's a voice coming from that side of the room or voice coming from that side of the room. In these cases, we are using even different codec. We are using J722 stereo, and there are some other numbers associated with that. Again, numbers are in documentation to which I will refer you in a moment. So this is how it works with Alice calling Bob or Alice calling Charlie, whatever, depending on networking conditions and depending on also on current state of the network. Oh, there is one more factor that has to be taken into consideration. Administrator might want to have influence on that. He has some mechanism in his hand. Link administrator has mechanism called call admission control or CAC. And these mechanisms can influence the codec selection. Can say, for example, we do not allow RT audio wideband codec. We want to just have RT audio narrowband. Normally, that wouldn't be a good idea, but certain administrators think they want to know better. Okay, so that was peer-to-peer audio. Now let's move to some more sophisticated, because we have even some more tough topics in front of us. So the audio conference is the, of course, normally a situation when multiple people join, right? Alice, Bob, Charlie join, and all their traffic flows to the audio conferencing server. Or sometimes, we call them AVMCO, audio video MCO, because they are, that's a software entity in Link 2013 that's sitting always with the Link server, Link frontend server, it's co-located, and it mixes audio. Audio could be a different thing. Could be, and this is slightly difficult to explain, so let me try to make an example. Let's assume that we have a central site in Moscow, that Alice is also in Moscow, but in some branch in Moscow, right? Not the same site. So the network latency from the main data center to branch site in Moscow will be very small, because the network is really good here, right? I mean, inside of the single city, you will probably have a fiber optic network. You will have a very low latency, maybe 10 milliseconds, when the packet goes from branch site of Alice to the data center. But then let's assume that Bob is in some other city, let's say Tula or St. Petersburg. And then he is really going via the one with more latency. Now, depending on the latency, the audio conferencing server might decide that I want to have the audio coming from that lady or that gentleman compressed using different codec, or rather delivered to using different codec. If that's Alice who is sitting in a low latency connection, and that's measured constantly, she will be using, her client will be using J722 codec, and that codec will actually go roughly 46 kilobit in a typical scenario when Alice just listens, doesn't talk much, or can jump up to 100 kilobits per second if she starts talking constantly like this, right? And of course you have to add the same things, RTCP, 5 kilobits per second. Now, for Bob, who is sitting in Tula or St. Petersburg, he has more milliseconds his traffic has traveled more milliseconds from here to here, from that city to Moscow's data center. Then AVMCU, or actually both of them, because that decision is being taken simultaneously on both sides, in link client of Bob and AVMCU for each side of the connection, because the audio is flowing from Bob to data center and also from the data center to Bob. So each side makes that decision, but each side is aware that the delay is more than 25 milliseconds, so they decide to choose the Siren codec. The Siren codec provides pretty decent audio quality and assumption, but it consumes less bandwidth. So it's like automatic detection that we are running over the one link, and that helps us to reduce the network consumption on the one links. That's the idea for the conferences. We implemented that because we found out that lots of customers are actually using conferencing from remote branches. It made much more sense for these customers to turn the default codec to slightly less, like half of the bandwidth, as you can see from the numbers, is required for Siren than for J722. And the quality is not as sacrificed, really. Now, audio-video MCU is clever enough to have streams with different codecs, and it can actually transcode on the fly between them. It's not that big thing to transcode audio. Very much different thing with video. Now, there might be also cases when we'd be using J711 in audio conferences. That's a very rare case. Rare or not, depending on the situation. But it will be a case when someone dials into the conference. When someone dials into the conference on that audio path towards AVMCU, you will see J711 codec. Audio compressed, well, actually not compressed, using J711. Why did I say rare? Because most often if people dial in, they will be dialing locally from via some PSTN access here, like SIP trunk or something, or maybe the gateway located here. So most often you will not see J711 codec running over the WAN for these type of connections, but that may happen. And again, numbers are in tables on the TechNet, and I'll refer to them. Now, since we started talking about the PSTN audio, that's also quite interesting beast in terms of how we utilize network bandwidth. So there are three scenarios, and I'll just go quickly through them because they are quite similar. So the first scenario is we are having centralized SIP trunk or centralized PSTN gateway. Big gateway for all the users. Even in branches, we don't have any gateways, or that they just use SIP trunk centrally. Like Alice calls someone, Alice is in Moscow, she calls someone, she uses the PSTN gateway in central side. So in this case, again, very similar rules apply, like in a conferencing, except different codecs will be used. If Alice is sitting in a very low latency location site, she will use J711 codec, J711 codec here, and then to mediation server, because there is always mediation server, link mediation server, if the PSTN calls are involved. And then of course, towards PSTN, we always use J711 codec. That's fixed. Now, if someone like Bob or someone else is sitting on a high latency site with a big delay, more than 25 milliseconds, then we use RT audio narrowband codec. Again, assumption is very similar, like in conferencing, we use RT audio narrowband, and then mediation server decodes RT audio narrowband into the J711, sends it over the SIP trunk or to a PSTN gateway. Here it's already as J711, but on this leg it's RT audio narrowband. And then, very unlikely, but there are some scenarios which might involve siren codec, but let's forget them. Primary is J711 or RT audio narrowband, and these are the numbers which can also be found on the technet. Another scenario is when you have a PSTN gateway in a local site. What do I mean by that? So let's assume right now that Alice is sitting, again, in a Moscow site, in some branch, but for some reasons in that branch we deployed local gateway. So if the local gateway is deployed, most often when she is making the call to the PSTN, the audio will stay locally. That's what Link calls media bypass. Basically, we do not send any media to the mediation server, which is sitting here. Mediation server is out of the media path. And in this case, since it's going locally, that would be J711. But if, for example, Bob is again still in St. Petersburg or Tula, and he is calling someone in Moscow, and we set up dial plan or routing rules in Link that way that when Bob calls from St. Petersburg, calls someone in Moscow, then we probably want to jump out through this gateway in Moscow. In that case, we'll go to the mediation server, and that, again, very similar rules apply, depending on whether it's a low latency link or high latency link, could be J711 or could be RT audio narrowband. Okay, so, and then the final scenario with the PSTN that could happen is when you have a PSTN gateway locally, but also like here in this site number 3, you have locally survival branch appliance, SBA, that typically can have mediation server in it. It's just a matter of running the mediation server code inside of the SBA. In this case, the flow will be again local, right? Because we have a local mediation server. That's pretty much it. And for the remote users, it will be very similar as like in previous scenario. It's either J711 or RT audio narrowband. So that was audio. And if you thought it was complicated, yes, it was. Some more stuff coming with video, and it will be even more fun. So with video, it's slightly more complicated because we use different flows, but it's less complicated because we use less codecs. We just use, actually, with Link 2013, we just use practically single codec, which is H.264 SVC. So what's happening if Alice calls Bob on video? This is not an audio call, this is a video peer-to-peer call. Well, if it's a peer-to-peer call, then we will basically set up the video path again from Alice to Bob, from branch 1 to branch 2, and central side might not even see that traffic, right? Actually, that's what should happen. Now, regarding the network consumption on that on that video call, that can actually vary, because it depends on various factors. The very first factor to take into consideration is what is the resolution of the call, and the resolution is defined basically by two factors again. The resolution is defined by the video window, how big the video window will show up on the user's screen. And that in turn depends on the resolution of the user screen. If I had just this laptop, which has a small screen, and I don't think it's actually capable of displaying the full high definition, then I'll probably start with the resolution something like CIFF-like resolution. Now, but if I'm using a desktop PC, which has like this screen here, which is full high definition capable, my initial video window might be larger because I have a bigger screen. And to provide a proper experience to user, we try not to show him the small, you know, stump of video. We try to show some decent video window. There is some selection algorithm in Link Client, and most likely on this desktop display will end up with the resolution initially something like, I don't know, VGA maybe. Definitely not HD, not full HD, but something bigger than CIFF, right? So this is the first thing. And the second thing, the second factor that determines what will be the actual utilization of the video bandwidth is the capabilities of the PC that's running Link Client. Again, if that's a nice laptop just bought from one of the vendors, which has four cores, I don't know, hardware acceleration, whatever, we might end up with resolutions quite high. I discussed that on a video during my previous session. But if I have like desktop that's, you know, 2 years old, if it has like dual core, I'll probably be limited in terms of resolutions to something like VGA, maybe full, maybe HD, but it depends. And also, that laptop might have a built-in camera, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a full HD camera, right? Maybe it's not even HD camera. Maybe it's just a webcam, pretty simple webcam that can go up to VGA. In that case, my Link Client will never be sending more than a VGA, right? Because my camera cannot produce anything more, so why would I be sending full? So there are different factors, right? As you can see, it's not easy to tell these days what will be the bandwidth from a single call, because there are so many factors. So we came up with certain model. We came up with certain utilization model, and I'll be discussing that in a moment, because we have to give you some numbers after all, right? And there are even some numbers there on the slide. But before I explain why they are there, and before I explain why they are like that, I have to explain how we build that model, how we build that approach which allows us to calculate that bandwidth. And again, whatever will be the consumption of the network bandwidth for the video call, we still have to add a little bit for the RTCP, that special quality monitoring channel, right? 10 kilobits per second, not much, but still. All right. So one more thing to add. If there would be a mixed environment involved, if for some reason someone had shown up in that branch in Tula or St. Petersburg, and that person still has a Link 2010 client, not Link 2013, then video calls will be going with RT video. And RT video has quite well-defined model for consumption. It's well-known from Link 2010, so it's quite easy to calculate for these clients. It's much more difficult for 2013 clients. All right, so now that you started understanding the complexities of video calculations for the point-to-point, let's jump into the multipoint. And by no means, I don't want to scare you, but please be prepared that there will be lots of flaws here. So obviously, if we have a video conference, it's about a couple of people joining in the same meeting, so there has to be a video bridge, and here's our video bridge, and there are video flows going on here and there. I had drawn fat arrows here on this slide, not because it's a lot of traffic, but because there is a lot of things inside. And you will see in a moment that, in fact, it's not that big of a traffic, but it's lots of things happening. All right, so what's happening inside? What's happening inside? So first, this is Alice, and all the users have Link 2013 clients. So Alice joined conference, and she starts sending her own video stream because Bob, who also joined conference, and Charlie, who also joined conference, want to see Alice. Their clients request from the video bridge, please send me the video image of Alice, because Alice is also in the conference. Same with Bob. Bob is sending his video stream because Alice wants to see Bob and Charlie wants to see Bob. Same with Charlie. So we have something like that, right? We have multiple streams going up and down, up and down. These are these fat pipes, right? Fat pipes which were on the previous screen. And again, you have to, on top of these, all these things, you have to take into account that there is also this special RTCP channel for quality. The RTCP channel, I haven't drawn it here because it would be too complex, but now, what's important right now to understand also, it's none of these green, yellow, or red flows is like full high definition. No. It wouldn't make sense. Why? Because Alice, let's look at Alice. Alice has her laptop or her desktop, and probably the laptop is like that, and the screen resolution of the laptop is, I don't know, maybe 10,400 by 10,000. Sorry, 1,400. 10,000, that would be nice. 1,400 by 10,000. That's a typical resolution of the laptop screen. Maybe slightly more, maybe slightly less. That laptop cannot simply display full high definition. It doesn't have, well, some laptops these days already have full high definition screens. But if I was able to get the full high definition on my laptop, that would be just one single stream, right? I mean, it doesn't make sense for me to get five full high definition streams because my laptop doesn't allow me to see them. I would have to have a laptop with display like this, 5,000 pixels by something, to be able to display five high-definition streams. I guess you have a question. Понятно. Я постараюсь говорить помилки, да. Okay. So you cannot get, I mean, it does not make sense to get five video full high definition streams. So what will be the single stream? What will be that green arrow or red arrow or yellow arrow? Actually, we found that most often Link client, it's not like we found, we basically designed it that way. Most often Link client will end up for sending something like sieve type of resolution for a single video stream here, because more or less, on a typical monitor or laptop, or even a desktop, for desktop it will be slightly more, right? We need just this type of resolution to build that multi-view gallery with 2, 3, 4, 5 different video streams. So you will have 2, 3, 4, 5 streams, who knows how many, but not with the full high definition. There will be lower resolution streams. Now, typically, as I said, we found that this resolution is slightly above sieve. Typically, actually, it's 240p. 240p is a special resolution. It's something similar to sieve. Let's put it that way, right? All right. Then, another thing that might happen is sometimes these streams will go down because of network conditions prevent them from delivering full 30 frames per second. Maybe sometimes we are just getting 15 frames per second. Or maybe the PC or mobile client, if that was a mobile client, is not capable to process 30 frames per second. Another factor that could be taken into consideration could be if Link 2010 clients join the video conference. If they join the conference, then they cannot process these multiple streams. They are just capable of doing old, good, well-known RT video stream. But then, the RT video stream, like from Alice, has to be delivered to them. So Alice is sending another stream, green dashed stream or dotted stream here to AVMCU, and via AVMCU switches it to the Link 2010. And the Link 2010, if it has the video camera, that gentleman here also will be sending his own video stream, and that video stream will be replicated here. Again, I didn't want to scare you, but I wanted you to understand the mechanisms. Now, the good things behind it, it sounds worse than it is. So we run lots of, actually we run internal Link 2013 client, clients even like 6 months before we got into the RTM. We had some customers which were running Link 2013 betas, and we tried to gather their experience, how they are going to use the Link clients, how many video streams. And it was interesting to understand what came out from this, how people will be using it. Because if we try to kind of mathematically model this complex situation that I've just shown you, it's almost impossible to model that mathematically, to get out with a kind of like certain number. So we had to gather the experience. That was the experience gathering phase. And we found out quite interesting things. Well, the first thing we found was the video is actually being utilized more in Link 2013 clients than in Link 2010. People are simply keen to use video more. On average, if I remember correctly, it was around 5 to 8% video calls in Link 2010. It's going above to 10-15% of video calls in Link 2013. The rest are audio. So it's like almost double amount of video calls, which could sound scary, but there are good news as well. Now, for the peer-to-peer calls, point-to-point calls, the interesting thing we found, that people are keen to experiment. People start with the default resolution and are keen to expand the window to see how nice it could look, whatever, but they don't necessarily stay with that. Why? Because they usually, even in a call, they have to work on some other documents, right? So they squeeze the window again, right? And this diagram here, it's quite complex to understand, but let me quickly walk you through that one because that's important to understand. So it's very simple, right? So what we have here is how many users were at what utilization per user. And it turns out that most of the users stayed here in this range. Some of them enlarged windows, but these were like minor percentage of users. 4%, 2% of users enlarged their window. Hence, if they enlarged their window or had a very good PCs that could do full high definition, then we've seen full high definition or high definition going to them during the period of the call. Most of the people stayed in a normal standard window sizes or decreased, little bit increased, and that's how we came up with these numbers of a typical utilization during the call. Now, for the multi-point calls, there's even more interesting finding. So we found that lots of people who join MultiView Gallery, well, they do send video, but not all of them. We rarely seen 5 active video streams in that, you know, the first row, in that video row. Yes, there might be more people actually ready to send video, but from these people who are talking, only on average 2 or 3 people were actually sending video. The rest were photographs, pictures, right? So it's not like 5 times the default stream, it's like 2.5, 3 times the default stream. So that's what we found. And also the interesting thing that we found is more than 70% of the conferences, when people start the video conference, they go all into some kind of collaboration, be it PowerPoint sharing, be it a whiteboard, be it desktop sharing, doesn't matter. From the video perspective, what matters is their gallery squeezes, because the gallery, which is normally like that on my screen, has to go slightly smaller because it has to go up to leave the room on the screen for the collaboration. So the video resolutions needed are smaller. Hence, the bandwidth is actually smaller. That might sound like a cheating, that might sound like a magic, but it's not. It's a reality, and we are officially documented that on TechNet. You'll see in a moment. And actually, what you see here, and it's really hard to see in this diagram, but these blue and black lines just show that majority of the users for the video conference are staying in a very, very low kilobits per second per user areas because of not that many users sending video and a collaboration thing, right? And actually, if you go to a TechNet, if you go to the official Link 2013 documentation, it's already documented there. It's being described in quite well how we are actually, well, it's not described to that level of detail that I described here, but there is quite enough of information there on the TechNet site, how exactly we are basically measuring that. And we have numbers there, right? And you can see the typical stream for the multi-view conference is around 260, 270 kilobits per second, while the typical, well, I'm sorry, you cannot see these numbers, but these are for point-to-point, peer-to-peer calls. And for the peer-to-peer calls, depending on the resolution, could be somewhere around 300, 800, well, could go even up to 2,000 or 4,000 if someone goes full high definition. But then still, on average, people most often then they don't run full high definition screen that often. Actually, when we are modeling, and I'll show you our modeling tool in a moment, we are making already some assumption, and assumptions are, if I remember correctly, and again, assumptions are based on our experience, gathered internally and gathered with our customers that were running beta. We are assuming that 80% of the users are staying with the default video window. Then I think like 15% of the users just enlarge the window a little bit. And then just like 5% of the users just go high definition or fully high definition. And again, you might say these are assumptions. Yes, they are assumptions. But they were based on actual data that we gathered so far. And we will be monitoring that over next months while you customers, partners start deploying Link. And we also use it internally. And that model might change, but this is what it is right now. This is what we are giving you to right now. And I think we are quite close into defining the model because we basically need to give you something to start with, right? And this is what's happening right now. We are actually moving into the phase where we are going to release the tool, which I'm going to show you quickly, really quickly right now. If only I manage to switch my screen, just give me a second, please. So this is the tool which hopefully will show up in a moment. Just a second. I just need to tell my PC to show it for you. So okay, just a second. Okay. All right. Now. All right, so extent. Let's see. Okay. All right. So this is the tool. This is the tool that we call bandwidth calculator. Now, this is not yet official. Actually, if you go to TechNet today, you will find the previous version of the tool, Link 2010 bandwidth calculator. It's there. It calculates the bandwidth for Link 2010. This is not yet official tool for Link 2013 calculations. And basically, what you provide into that tool, you provide a couple of things. And I'll just use already pre-filled version. I kind of already pre-filled that for you, just to show you what's in there. So the very first thing that you put into that tool, and I'm really sorry, I'll try to enlarge it a little bit more so you can better see it from the distance, maybe like that. So you defined what sites do you have. You define, for example, that I have a central site, Moscow, central site, Novosibirsk. Central sites are obviously the ones in which you have Link servers, right? Then you define your branch sites. Could be Moscow branch sites, Tula, Yakutsk, other branch sites. And then you say also to the tool, you have to explain to the tool that like Tula branch sites belong to central site Moscow because users in Tula, they use video, when they do audio conference or video conference, they use the Moscow audio or video conferencing server, right? So this is kind of telling the tool what is my Link topology. Then another thing that you have to give to the tool, let me just move it a little bit, oops, sorry, too far. Then you tell the tool what are my WAN links. In central sites, I have my WAN link that might be 34 megabits per second or 150 or 10 megabits or just 1 megabit, depending. And if I have internet connections, I also give to the tool information, what's my internet connection? Internet connection, if you have link edge there, will be used for remote users. If you don't have in that site internet connection, if you don't have link edge, then maybe some other sites is providing services for remote users. So you have to define it, but you have to first of all give the tool information of how much bandwidth. Same, of course, for the branch sites. Typically, branch sites would probably have less bandwidth, of course. And there's also interesting here number saying, this is my link, this is my whole link in Moscow branch, 5 megabits per second, but actually I have some other traffic there. I have my CRM traffic, my SQL traffic, my Exchange traffic there. Please tell me how much of this 5 megabits per second you are actually willing to provide for the link. Could be 2 megabit, could be 1. It depends on what the customer or you might be willing to dedicate to resources. Now, the tool needs this because it will later display to you if you have enough bandwidth, right? As simple as that. Then, the next thing that you provide to the tool, sorry again, it's kind of tough to scroll here with this not very big resolution of my screen. Okay, so then you have to provide the information how many users you have. So you may say, I have 50 users in my Moscow branch and I have 100 users in my Tula branch. Now, there are two things here. So first I have to provide how many people are there, but also there might be different people. Might be people who are using Link in a different way. Like office workers use Link quite often in a typical way using IM, some audio calls and PSTN calls, but they don't necessarily use, even if they are in office, they don't necessarily use video because they most often just can come to the other, especially in a small offices like Yakus or Tua, they are small, they just come to the other desk and they don't need to make a video call. Now, in the user, in the tool, you can provide many different types of users. Actually, sorry, three types of users. You can say, I have this type of user and I have that many users of this type. And then I have, oops, sorry, too far. And then I have 10, 50 users. It's really hard to see, but I have 50 users of one type of user, and then I have 10 users of different type of user. And you define this type of users, what link modalities, what link types of communication they are going to use. Now, as a result, what you will get then, you'll get calculations. How many peer-to-peer audio, how many peer-to-peer video, how much audio, how much video, how much video conferencing traffic would be required from these users. As you can see, that's still being worked, so there are some working comments in the tool. But what really matters at the end is the tool gives you indication. Should you have that many Link users that are using Link 2013 clients or Link 2010, because you can decide as well, your one link, you will be able to carry the traffic, right? It will have like 55% of the traffic on the, 55% of the one link of your one connection will be occupied by link traffic, but you can still carry it, right? Or the tool will tell you, sorry, if I have that many users, I'm afraid I cannot have, like here, the tool is telling you, you are expecting too much traffic on that one link. So either do something, reduce, probably you cannot reduce the number of users, but at least you can reduce what they can use, maybe disable video for them, or maybe just buy more bandwidth if you need to, right? So this is, the tool is actually, what the tool has is actually has all logic in it to cleverly do the calculations that you would have to do to address all these scenarios that I discussed with all the complexities, all the flaws, everything there is kind of being encoded in that tool. Вот на этом я думаю, я уже закончу. Сейчас сейчас немножечко осталось на вопросы, так если какие-то остались, пожалуйста, никаких не было, но если какие-то остались, пожалуйста, вот это время на вопросы. There is one question. I'm not sure if you have a question. Yes. Yeah. So maybe this gentleman will ask question first. So I don't think I have to translate the question. I think everybody heard the question as well, yes? Okay. So if we have multiple, and I'm sorry, I'll answer in English, okay? So if we have multiple screens, and the way we work with Link2013 client is, if you decide to have the experience with of multi-view conference, it will be this panel of the conference that you can move to one of the screens, but it will always be in one of the screens. It won't be like it will expand over multiple screens. It will just only be on one. And the calculations are still kind of the same then, as simple as that. We are not splitting the experience, video experience among multiple screens. What you can split, you can have a video on one screen with a gallery, and you have a collaboration on the other screen. But we are not splitting video. I think you had the question. Я знаю. Да, понятно. Especially из Сахалина, да? How can I answer that? Well, this is an outcome of the design of Link. We decided that the Link users are kind of tied with their what's called home pool of Link servers. And simply speaking, if you have a home pool of the Link servers really very, very far away from your users, unfortunately, even with the best codecs that we have, RT audio, RT video, or H.264 SVC, there might be some impairments on the quality because of the big delay. Now, with the Office 365, what is additionally kind of difficult in this scenario is you really have no influence where your link pool is located, right? Because you are just buying the service, right? Now, so honestly speaking, you have two options, either discussing with the Office 365 team to kind of try to position you, if possible, your users in a link pool that's closer to them, but that's not always possible because they don't have that many link pools all over the world. And the second thing, you can try to think about deploying hybrid link. Like you might think about using Link Office 365 for most of the users, but for these users in Sahalin or whatever, you might deploy Link on premise and they will have your own video conferencing server there. With Link 2013, you can have a single SIP domain, your own SIP domain splitting between Office 365 and Link on premise. That's the only second choice, honestly, that you have. But that requires your investment in your own link on-premise. I guess there is one more question, but since we are over time, before I take the question, I would like to thank you very much for your attention, and let's take the questions here. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
В 2010 году мы решили внедрить службу Microsoft Team Foundation Server. Зачем? Мы знали, что эти службы беспрепятственно интегрируются с новыми и прежними версиями Visual Studio, упрощают управление новыми разработками и дают возможность безопасно администрировать существующий код.
Опыт использования Team Foundation Server в компании NVIDIA подтверждает, что система легко воспринимается разработчиками ПО, аналитиками, тестировщиками. Руководству она позволяет сконцентрироваться на управлении общим ходом проекта, контролируя отдельные задачи. Приобретение Team Foundation